This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is out today, but what a week it has been this week. On Beacon Hill, lawmakers worked at breakneck pace to reach the end of the legislative session. The result? More than 30 new bills on Governor Deval Patrick's desk, including another landmark in health care.
This is more than a good bill, a really great bill. And we're going to crack the code now on cost control.
Also, child abuse made multiple headlines this week with a searing spotlight report from the Boston Globe to a failed legislative proposal to the probation-only sentence of a Brookline rabbi.
Did they do a proper Corey check? Did they have psychological evaluation done? Were the supervisors diligent? Obviously not.
Meanwhile, your chances of winning big in the cash windfall game are 1 in 9,366,891. Except, of course, if you're a gambling syndicate that's breaking the rules with a little help from lottery officials, which is exactly what happened in Massachusetts, according to a new Inspector General report. And speaking of probabilities, officials say they're more than 90% certain a great white shark attacked a Massachusetts swimmer, the first such attack in over 70 years.
My lungs were fine, my kick was fine, but I was starting to feel kind of dizzy and wondering if I was losing blood. I knew I'd been bit pretty bad.
There is so much to discuss this week in our Week in Review, so let's get to it. Joining me now is Joan Vinaki, columnist for the Boston Globe and a Radio Boston regular. Hi there, Joan.
Nice to be back.
It's great to have you. Also with us is Bruce Moll, editor of Commonwealth Magazine. Good to see you again as well, Bruce.
Good to be here.
So let's start with that slew of legislative activity at the State House. They apparently work very well on deadline because on Tuesday, the last day of the legislative session, 32 bills were passed, 14 in just the last 2 hours, including the controversial three strikes crime bill, the so-called three strikes crime bill, I should say. Its official name is the Habitual Offender Bill. Now, Governor Deval Patrick signed that bill yesterday, though not happily. He says the legislature will need to revisit the whole issue of mandatory sentencing next year and whether it makes sense.
There are an awful lot of states that have concluded it does not after having done the homework. And that is what we are committed to do over the next several months and what the legislature will turn to in the next session.
But Joan, Governor Patrick signed that bill anyway. You wrote about it in your column in the Globe. Do you think he basically backed down?
This is one of his more curious decisions, I would say. At the very least, he seems ambivalent about what happened in the end. In the last moments of the legislature, he tried to get them to, have judicial discretion be part of it. They slapped him down on that. He signed it. He says he's going to sign the bill, then he does it behind closed doors. It's a little strange. Mm.
You know, you wrote in your column that the emotional weight behind this bill and the fact that we have had some very high-profile, terrible crimes done by repeat offenders, that may have basically been the driving force that even Patrick couldn't stand up to.
I think that's really the best explanation for it. I think it is really difficult to look at the father of a murder victim as, Les Gossel, who has been lobbying for this bill for over 10 years, and other high-profile cases, and, step back and not see it their way. And I think that got to him in the end.
Bruce, your thoughts on this?
Well, I was amazed at the lack of information politicians had about this subject. I think you saw the governor today, he'd always said he wanted a balanced bill, one that allowed nonviolent drug offenders to get out of jail so we could reduce the number of people in prison and then lock up the really serious criminals, that sort of balanced approach. But no one really knew all along through this debate what they were doing in terms of what these policies would create. Numbers were thrown everywhere about what would happen. Some people said our prisons would be flooded with people. Others said no, it wouldn't. And the governor now, when he signs it, has very precise numbers. 580 nonviolent drug offenders become eligible for parole, and only 8 people would be eligible or would be fall under the three strikes rule. So he seems to have concluded at the last minute here that the numbers are real. But I think the real story is that no one knows exactly what the ramifications of this is going to be.
And yet the bill gets signed by the governor. Well, speaking of possibly unknown ramifications, another major bill was passed in the legislature this week, and that is, of course, the healthcare cost control bill. But this one, Governor Patrick was actually quite pleased to see.
This is more than a good bill, a really great bill. This is a Commonwealth that has shown the nation how to extend coverage to everybody. And we're going to crack the code now on cost control.
Well, not everyone agrees with that. Representative James Miceli of Wilmington, a Democrat, opposed the legislation.
Because of what is in this bill, patients may not get the care they deserve. I really believe deep down we're going to live to regret what we do here today.
Joan, this is absolutely the next chapter in the healthcare battle. I mean, proponents of this bill claim that the state is going to save some $200 billion or cost will be controlled by $200 billion over the next 15 years. I mean, that's quite a claim. What do you make of this next chapter?
I think someone more expert than I will have to, you know, come to the conclusion of what it will actually do. But I think that the political purpose of it was very clear, and Governor Patrick spoke to it in that clip that you played. This is showing the nation that Massachusetts is addressing health care costs. That's really important right now in this presidential campaign between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
Bruce, you talked a little bit earlier about lawmakers not really knowing exactly what was going on with the three strikes bill. I mean, this health care compromise bill came out of committee with just 16 hours left in the legislative session, and it's over 350 pages. So. Yeah.
It's just incredible that such a complicated subject, such a industry that's so important to our local economy, it got passed with hardly anyone, I think, except maybe a handful of people knowing exactly what's in this bill. And I think it's fair to say that it is a step in the right direction, but it throws a lot of things out there against the wall, and I think there's going to be a long time before we see what sticks and what really works.
That seems to be sort of how we, the steps that get taken forward when it comes to the healthcare issue overall. Joan, before we leave Beacon Hill permanently here for this week in review, you did get a chance to actually talk with the governor this week, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
I had gone to the media, well, I'd gone to the event that he was at at the time that he agreed to sign on to the bill. I asked a question afterwards. He didn't want to answer it. He said to give him a call. The call was set up, and we did speak over the telephone at length.
I was wondering about that because you mentioned that you think that the healthcare cost control bill is Massachusetts showing the nation, and you implied in your column that you had asked Governor Patrick about whether showing the nation certain things politically is important to him regarding his own political future.
Right, and the problem when you interview someone is you have to give them you have to give their answer, not necessarily your opinion about their answer.
And he basically demurred.
He denied. He said it had no national implications, nothing to do with Barack Obama, said he had not spoken to the president or the campaign, and this was his own decision.
Well, one more bill that we want to talk about briefly, and also because it leads us to our next topic in this week's Week in Review, is a child sexual abuse bill that would basically have expanded the statute of limitations on civil claims that people or victims of child abuse would seek to file against their abusers. That bill did not make it through the legislature. So that's one way in which child abuse did rear its terribly ugly head this week in Massachusetts. A couple other ways. Reverend Andrzej Urbaniak of Our Lady of Częstochowa Church in South Boston was arrested Tuesday for downloading and distributing child pornography. And Rabbi Stanley Levitt was sentenced to 10 years probation yesterday for sexually abusing three students in the 1970s. He was also charged with molesting children in Pennsylvania in the 80s, but found not guilty there. So we have some tape here from the children's attorney, Boston lawyer Mitchell Garabedian.
We know of two cases now in two different states in two different decades, and one has to wonder how many children are out there who are sexually molested by Rabbi Stanley Levitt.
We should note that the children that I noted in this case are actually adults now, but they were children at the time. On top of that, there was that searing report in Sunday's Boston Globe about a worldwide child pornography ring that was basically pursued from federal agents based here in Massachusetts. So, Joan, let's start with you. Your thoughts about these cases coming up in Massachusetts. Does it seem as if child abuse, is it just one of those moments where everyone's attention is on it, or are we seeing that maybe not enough is being done to prevent it?
Well, one thought I had is that the Catholic Church has argued for a really long time that the media has focused only on them and held them to a higher standard. Well, I certainly don't think everyone does it is a defense, it certainly puts the problem, the issue, in a much broader context and makes you, you know, realize and think that it's going on in lots of places.
Mm. Bruce, your thoughts?
Well, I think one reason these issues keep coming up with greater frequency is that the people who have been victimized are seeing more and more cases themselves, and they decide, for whatever reason, maybe they didn't want to deal with it when they were younger, but now they're saying they've had enough and they're willing to step forward. It's sort of, it's coming out of the shadows, and I think people are stepping up and saying they want to get justice for themselves.
But on the other hand, this the piece of legislation that didn't make it through the legislature this past week, it's a bill that would have extended the statute of limitations for civil cases against child sexual abusers. Now, currently, if I understand correctly, those civil claims have to be filed before a victim turns 21. Again, it's for civil cases. And the bill would have raised that age to 43, essentially giving a couple more decades of time. On the one hand, there is a sense that maybe it's just difficult to find the courage to file these cases when you're under 21. But on the other hand, statutes of limitations basically exist for a reason. So your thoughts on the fact that this bill didn't really go anywhere this time around?
Yeah, I think it probably makes sense that it didn't go anywhere because my sense is that there are a lot of lawyers in the legislature, and I'm sure they've thought about that statute of limitations and the whole issue of trying to build a case after 20, 30 years have gone by becomes very difficult and very hard for anyone to unravel. And I think uncertainty about that is probably why they held back.
Yeah, when Joan, we've seen that in all these cases regarding the Catholic Church, as you had mentioned earlier, evidence gets unreliable. There's a whole issue of recalled memories. I mean, one could only imagine what all the victims of abuse within the church were thinking when they thought they might have the opportunity to bring civil cases so many years after the fact.
Well, I think those are good points, but I also wonder at how much of business on Beacon Hill is done, you know, sort of behind closed doors without open debate. There hasn't really been much, you know, written or talked about with this particular bill. And they may have good reasons, but, you know, why not sort of address them and make it an open public debate?
Mm. This is something that we keep coming back to in Week in Review. Lots of stuff going on behind closed doors, even though we have an open meeting policy in Massachusetts. Well, last but not least, definitely this week in our Week in Review, great white sharks, because Christopher Myers was body surfing off a beach in Truro with his son. And this week, he was bitten on the leg by what authorities are fairly certain was a great white shark. This would be the first great white shark attack since a fatal one happened back in 1936. Now, Myers is recovering at Massachusetts General Hospital, and he spoke with reporters just a few hours ago and described the moment of the attack. It happened right after he and his son had decided to swim back to shore.
Just after we decided to do that, I felt a huge bite on my leg, and I was quite sure it was a shark. That was my first thought. I felt like my leg was caught in a vise. I kicked very hard with my free leg, with my right leg, and I was able to, or the shark decided I wasn't tasty or something good happened, and he let me go.
Thank goodness for not being tasty. Bruce, do you think this attack will have any effect on Cape tourism?
No, I think the roads will still be clogged going down there all the time. But it will. I think it is penetrating everybody's consciousness that sharks congregate where the seals are. And so it may shift where people go swimming in the ocean based on that. But I don't think, in fact, I think it's bringing a lot of attention. I think there's probably a lot of curiosity about this whole process now.
Joan, what are your thoughts about this? I mean, this is the first virtually confirmed great white shark attack in 70 years.
Right, so that leads me to believe it's not that big a deal. And it's one more reason why the legislature can do what it does, because people are much more interested in the great white shark and this guy's, you know, quotes than they are about what's happening with any of these bills.
Okay. Point taken, Joan. I definitely take your point, but I'm still going to ask another question about sharks, because this actually has to do with the science of sharks. Apparently, wildlife officials say that they're tracking about 9 of them off the coast of Massachusetts right now, and the tracking equipment that they use is mostly on the southern part of the Cape, where sharks are seen more often, but Truro is obviously not the southern Cape. So, Bruce, I mean, is there any evidence or thought here that it's time for us as observers of nature to just basically get updated and maybe move all that tracking equipment further north?
I don't quite follow. What do you mean move it north?
Well,
you mean it move it from the
From the southern Cape further up.
Further up.
If we're having shark sighting further north.
Yeah, it probably is. I thought it worked. Doesn't it work by the? Isn't there something attached to the shark, but they can't follow it when it goes further away or something like that?
Yeah, they're limited in the range that they can follow the shark.
Yeah, so. I don't know. Every time you start talking about this, I start hearing the Jaws theme in my head. You know, boom, 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 boom. And I think people are, as Jones says, they're fascinated by sharks. But I don't think it'll stop.
Okay, to save both of you, I will now move away from the shark story. Joan, let's talk really quickly, if we can, about the Massachusetts lottery, because this is another case of potentially government officials not behaving well, because apparently the Massachusetts state lottery knowingly profited from several gambling syndicates that were basically rigging the cash windfall system. That's one of the games in the Massachusetts lottery. An inspector general report that came out this week said that they were doing it with the help of state lottery officials. So, Joan, your thoughts on that?
Shocked and appalled. What else can I say? Also happy that I don't play the lottery.
Bruce?
Well, I think you know, the point of the lottery is to make money for the state. So what happened here was some people saw a way to personally make a lot of money, and the lottery said, gee, I guess that's okay if we make a lot of money at the same time. So there was a mutual interest there that I guess shut out the rest of the gambling community in a sense. But it's hard to get too shocked about them trying to make as much money as they can and the private guys trying to do the same thing. It actually was a fascinating story about how much time and money you have to spend to make the odds work in your favor, though, and how much the lottery had to do to help them do that was amazing.
Well, finally, we have time for our hubbubs. Joan, what's yours?
Well, I was going to use my hubbub to put in a word of sympathy for Rick Gorka, the Romney press aide, who got in trouble for cursing at the press at a campaign stop in Poland. I'm usually not so soft-hearted, but he's sort of put on leave for a while. I think he's going back on the campaign. And I just wanted to say that I think a lot of people would love to tell the press what he did, A, and B, he was kind of taking the rap for a candidate who was reluctant to meet the press. That's the real issue. I think Mitt Romney did meet with the press today, so maybe he got the message.
Oh, great hubbub. Bruce, yours.
Mine is in that vein of us not knowing what's going on up on Beacon Hill. This jobs bill that was one of the, you know, several dozen that passed at the very end contained a provision that was somewhat interesting. In Boston, we have a business improvement district where businesses agree to pay more voluntarily in taxes to clean up the area. But you could opt out if you didn't want to participate after it was approved. This legislation won't allow you to opt out. So they're going to force all the commercial landlords to participate. Very interesting development.
My hubbub is Kayla Harrison. I know we've been all undergoing Ali Raisman fever in the Olympics, but Kayla Harrison, who won the U.S. Judo team's first gold medal, originally from Massachusetts, she comes back from having been abused by her former coach and wins an Olympic gold. To me, that is truly the Olympic spirit. So that's my hubbub for today. Joan Vernocchi, columnist for the Boston Globe, thanks so much for joining us and enduring some shark conversation.
Thank you.
It's always great to have you. Bruce Moll, editor of Commonwealth Magazine, always great to see you again. Thanks as well.
Thank you.
Well, stay with us, because coming up next, Shakespeare on the Common makes a Roman tragedy modern for our political times. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.